This is the Integrate Intelligently podcast from Catatalk Software. A podcast about the people, programs, and processes that come together to make businesses successful. At Catatalk, we're a software integration company, but we believe this idea of intelligent integration goes much deeper than software.
Welcome back to Season 2, Episode 8 of the Integrate Intelligently podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Brickler. Today, we are joined again by two special guests, my normal companion, Scott Brickler, CEO and founder of Catatalk. And today, we also have Cindy Bratel. Cindy is joining us from Baker Tilly Digital Services. Today, our topic is talking about redefining manufacturing through sustainability and innovation. So Cindy, Scott, great to have you on the podcast today for this topic.
Thanks for inviting me, Jeff and Scott. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So Cindy, you and I, we just were talking about that you and I have known each other for a number of years now. You've been working for quite a few years. Maybe I won't say the number. Maybe I don't know how you feel about that, but for a number of years with, Yeah, right. My gray beard gives away my age very easily, but you got a wealth of experience. What's that?
You stepped right into the stuff, right?
Sure did.
It's fine. I don't mind.
So Cindy, I know, right? Get myself in trouble. That's just like me. So Cindy, you've been working with folks for a long time, a number of years with ERP and technology. You know, you have experience in project management. I assume that's how you got your start, which is through project management and working with ERP clients and manufacturing. Is that really where you got your kind of start?
My start was really in IT for sure. Yeah. And really trying to move clients from our companies from mainframe and Big Blue IBM into client server technology. So that really is dating me in terms of the number of years I've been in the industry, but really have always been in the manufacturing space from that perspective.
So you always worked in like an IT perspective. Were you working for manufacturing or did you start just in kind of IT and consulting and digitization?
No, I started in IT. I have an IT undergrad and then I have a master's in production operations management. And so I started in IT, but very quickly moved into consulting and did some time with a Big Four firm, went back into industry, and now with Baker Tilly the last 18 years of my career.
How did you get into manufacturing? What was it about manufacturing that drew you? Just what you got, like what you ended up with? Because a lot of things in life are coincidental, right? You just end up places.
Yeah. I used to go and speak to high school students about a career in computing and they'd always ask me, how do I get to where you are? And it's like, you can't plan it. It just sort of happens to you, right?
It just sort of happens.
And you make decisions and you make choices along the way. For me, I happened to take on an internship when I was going to college that was with a manufacturing company here in Wisconsin. I also really gravitated in my undergrad studies to production and ops management classes and really excelled at them. So I knew there was something about that for me that just clicked. And so between the technology as well as manufacturing, that's really kind of how I found my way into the career that I did. Just have always wanted and gravitated towards manufacturing, but love technology and just found that I had an aptitude for it, really.
That's similar to Scott's background as well, being, as you said, like an intern. We called them co-ops here, the university we went to locally, but essentially that internship at a manufacturing company where you got experience working in that industry.
Right.
So Cindy, I think today we're talking about sustainability. And I think, you know, from what I understand, you've written an article recently about this topic. This is I know that IFS and Baker Tilly and you especially focus on this sustainability. So I'd really like to talk a little bit about that article you wrote and maybe help educate myself and others about what sustainability is and how you see that turning up in manufacturing and why it's critical now. You know, I think Scott and I often with manufacturing these days feel like we're in the crosshairs of politics because of everything. But how is, you know, talk about maybe manufacturing and how sustainability is affecting manufacturing and why it's important for manufacturing these days, especially in the United States where we are and everywhere really.
No, happy to. Maybe just to take a step back, just in terms of my role here at Baker Tilly and our digital practice, is I lead our IFS Solutions global practice here at Baker Tilly. So really have become a formal partner with IFS since about 2018. And since then, have just been a growing practice to really try and serve in two markets. We serve in North America and we serve out of the UK and I market as well. So a bit of an international footprint with a team of about 140 plus people across the regions, including Sri Lanka, and a great team, and really one of the best IFS solutions professional services teams out there, in our opinion. So, but I'm not biased or anything. Happy to talk about sustainability and kind of what we're seeing. You know, again, you know, my career spanned more than 30 years in manufacturing, both from serving clients in a consultative way to actually being and working in the manufacturing company. So early on, that first company where I was in IT was really an organization here in Wisconsin called, at the time, Stay-Rite Industries, now Pentair Water Processing. They've been since acquired a number of years ago. And then as I went in and out of consulting and back into industry, spent a number of years in Dana Corporation in the automotive industry, running their aftermarket business, as well as Carrier in the HVAC business as well. So I did supply chain strategy for Carrier. So I guess that background and those experiences kind of get me to where we are today and talk about manufacturing and sustainability, as I've really experienced a lot of different industry subsectors and sort of from both sides of the fence, being in chair and also helping clients really kind of excel and grow in their business and transform their business. So yeah, I mean, really, you know, we all see it. I think no matter what angle you look at, manufacturing is really going through a fundamental transformation right now, primarily driven by technology, but also sustainability concerns, right? And what's happening sustainability-wise. Changing customer requirements. You know, our customers are getting smarter and smarter and more demanding every day. And then just the need for supply chain resilience. You know, the transformation's really creating both challenges and opportunities for manufacturers, in my mind, really requiring them to have to adopt and innovate and stay competitive in what is now a very large, evolving global market. You know, there was a time when manufacturers kind of stayed in their home country, right? But it's kind of rare that you don't find even the smallest manufacturer not doing some kind of business internationally. And so what we do in North America is no longer the only rules we follow when we go international. And so when I think about, you know, what does that mean in terms of what we're seeing with manufacturers, the introduction of Industry 4.0, driving technology innovation, IFS, you know, you can't be in the ecosystem without hearing AI, 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 right? That's the big buzzword right now, both from a technology perspective, but also in the IFS ecosystem. We, for many years, have been very focused on IIoT. How do we connect the shop floor into the ERP system or whatever systems to collect that data? And then just really increasing sustainability and supply chain resilience. Supply chain resilience really driven or emphasized even more by the pandemic, right? We've all experienced that and how supply chain shut down, timelines extended. And so when you think about all the changing things happening with manufacturers, they have to be so much more on their toes and really understanding what's going on in the world.
Yeah. So I know that that's a good point that you make about like manufacturing, even the smallest clients in the US, you know, have a global footprint in some regard. If nothing more than they sell their products internationally, right? They sell their products everywhere, or they have production in those other locations. And regulations, of course, right? Like every country has its own regulations around sustainability, around manufacturing, around the environment, the ecosystem, right? How manufacturers need to adjust to all of those things. What do you see as the limitations that manufacturing, like the current systems they have, and because in terms of sustainability, and what are the challenges there and the opportunities both for manufacturing companies?
Yeah. So, you know, I would just say historically, you know, production systems really, you know, treated resources like they're infinite, right? And there was a lot of waste that was just acceptable and inevitable. But, you know, as we really think about, and, you know, you mentioned something about politics and whatever. We will not get through this conversation today without injecting something about politics that's going on in this country, right? We can't, right? It's all centered around manufacturing.
Yeah, you can't escape it.
Manufacturing back into the States in some form or fashion, right? So, but I think, you know, whether you believe in global warming or don't believe in global warming, you know, there are depletion of resources that are happening all over the world, right? We see it. If you don't feel it in the temperatures that change and shift, I live in Wisconsin. I'm used to feet full of snow all winter long. We did not have that much snow this year, and we've seen a decline of that over time, which, you know, would point to potentially some level of global warming. Pollution and all the things that are going on with pollution. And, you know, I think back to when the pandemic started and the picture of California before the pandemic started and after everybody was shut down, and how you could actually satellite view see California so differently without all the smog and pollution from all of the manufacturing and businesses that were running equipment and machines and whatever. And just the ecosystem damage, right? Like, I mean, it's existent, it's real. And, you know, whether it started in North America, it started somewhere in the globe, and we have those pressures to be thinking about that. So, you know, these systems really, you know, have historically thought about profit over sustainability. And there's a major shift now in people's thinking about we have to lead with sustainability practices and not having a negative impact on our environment and on our world. You know, all of us want the world in a good place for the kids and the grandkids and the great grandkids that are going to follow us for generations to come. So I think, you know, that shift in more sustainable production methods, including, you know, what they would call the circular economy, which is really difficult for people to, I think, in manufacturing to even get their heads around. Even for me, it's hard because you don't see a lot of it right now. You know, there's hundreds of millions of manufacturers around the globe. How many of them are really in that circular economy? But we're talking about concepts that are going to continue to grow and increase in adaption, over time. So
one of the things I was thinking about that with like how it's coming more, it's kind of like, I think of it almost like how smoking became unpopular. Like it's like very similar. Like it became like when it was just that person hurting themselves, they really couldn't get much traction. But as soon as they changed the story about how it was secondhand smoke and how it was affecting other people, then all of the everything shifted to being, and it's almost like smoking is almost, you know, like considered taboo these days. It's like a completely different thing. I'm seeing the same thing happen with the sustainability or the environmental factors. You're seeing where it's like, oh, this isn't just like that, you know, this little isolated incident. This is a global problem that's happening everywhere that we have to address. Otherwise, like our children, like you said, you address someone's children or their next generation, it just hits right at home and really changes that behavior. So you change the image in people's minds, it changes demand, which then puts pressure on the suppliers to do something different.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, we're all interconnected and that's what's happening. I think that smoking and secondhand smoke example is a perfect analogy, Scott, to what we're seeing and what's happening.
Yeah, I think I was just going to add that regardless of what the politics of it, right? It's as you meant it, like whether we should have manufacturing in the US or not, or globalization or not, or is global warming a factor or not? All those aside, I think in today we can say, like, well, look, we want to have cleaner. We want to be cleaner, right? We want to have cleaner industry because we're like, I live in a house. My house is 150 years old and we've had to deal with lead paint, right? That's a result of, I'm not saying it's anybody's mistake, but it's a result of like, you know, those practices. And it's like, I think now it's like, well, we have to deal with these things regardless of where we are because we only live on one planet. We realize that what happens in America or happens anywhere makes an impact on different places. And so regardless of your politics, I think it's important everyone agree that we got to think about these things and make changes to support them.
It's about education, right? And I think that's what you guys are trying to do too with your podcasts here is we didn't know what lead paint was doing to us health-wise over the years, right? You didn't know about asbestos and what that making those products long ago with asbestos was going to do to people over time. And so we've had lessons learned from history, more lessons to learn going forward. And it's all about being educated on, you know, what we see, what we hear, and people make their own decisions about what they believe. But nonetheless, there's still a lot of things.
Reality
you can read
is
about,
reality.
Right. Right.
Believe what you want, but the fact that lead paint, you know, lead damages kids and the fact that asbestos it gives you cancer. And I mean, these things matter, right? These things are not really debatable, right? These are issues. So
the something you mentioned earlier, like Jeff brought up about the circular manufacturing, when I was still in consulting, we actually, one of the weirdest or also very interesting processes I remember getting into was a company that did demanufacturing. Like they actually did, they would like recycle computer systems from the government facilities, and then essentially break all the computers back down to their core elements, like pull the gold out of it and all of the things out of it so they could reuse them. And I just remember like trying to model that in the ERP because that's why I was doing ERP implementations and stuff. And it was just like a completely different way of thinking. And it was just like, it really kind of blew my mind about how to do that. And I kept thinking like, that is actually a problem that will occur. that will actually become more the norm than kind of the exception. Is that kind of what you mean by the circular manufacturing, that kind of example?
It is. You know, minimize waste, maximize resource efficiency. And like you, Scott, to be honest with you, I worked for Dana Corporation in the automotive industry. We used to recycle what we called cores. We could reuse them. And so we had a department that literally pulled the cores out of some of the products that we were selling because you could reuse it. They were very costly and expensive, right? Maybe we did it for different reasons. It was profit driven, like I said earlier, and now people are really thinking about it from a sustainability perspective. But nonetheless, it's the same concept of what you're trying to do. Also at Dana Corporation, we built oxygen sensors that use platinum, very expensive precious metal, right, and mineral. And we were able to recycle the platinum on reusable, you know, oxygen sensors as well, because of the cost of that, you know, was really important. Again, the underlying driver was profitability, but the actions and the activities that we took, or the manufacturing, or how we unmanufactured or demanufactured, so to speak, are the same processes. To your point, though, we've got to have capabilities and technology that help drive that as well for us and make it easier.
It's beautiful when like the economic factors and the sustainability factors align, right? You can, because you get people to do things because it's the right thing to do sometimes. If you could affect the pocketbook, they tend to do it more often. You know, it seems to be the just human behavior. You're like, let greed work for you in that respect, right? So if the technology can create a dynamic where that works, like it's like technology enables you to do something like recycle that or find the core or find that example to do that, where it actually does affect you economically, it also aligns with sustainability practices. That's a real kind of win-win-win all the way around. Yeah. And it's, I always think that's like, we're talking about that. Like we had a podcast, a couple, you know, about supply chain, and like, you talk about like large economic factors and where you can actually do these levers and things that you can change in kind of in the ecosystem that cause behavior to change. It's kind of like macroeconomics, how you can do that. I always think about technology being one of those ones that people don't really realize is that the technology could change and shift the way you do things in a way that changes, almost changes the way, like just like that. If it becomes easier through technology to pull that core, to reuse that platinum, then you will do that. And the economics also align with the sustainability. Until you have the tech, it doesn't matter. You can't do it. You know, so I just think about like, how can you do that more? Just something I'm thinking out loud as we're talking. So.
No, definitely.
I think about like, Sandy, when you mentioned that automotive, it reminded me of like growing up in my dad's garage, and we would have to do, you know, we were working on cars. You know, Scott and I came from a more blue collar background when we were kids. And I remember taking those, like you could take certain things back and get that core charge, right? You could get they would take this, have this fee that you'd pay up front, and to get your money back, it was the same idea. I need to come give that, you know, whatever that core charge was, so that they could either recycle it and get the value out of it, or they could recondition that and resell it, or whatever they would do. I would think this is the same idea, just on a larger scale.
It is, and more sustainable. It's not, you know, manual activities where people are kind of tracking that on a piece of paper and those kinds of things. It's really more automated, more sustainable, I think, just in terms of the process itself. You know, those were pretty manual processes we were doing back then, hard labor, et cetera. That was, right, you know, kind of difficult.
Which made it as,
I just want to,
which what Scott was
about your garage. I was going to make a comment about your garage days. They're coming back. You know, I see a lot of young people wanting to mess with cars again and like pair their own cars and do stuff. So it's not a lost art. I think it's coming back slowly.
When you mentioned the oxygen sensors, I was thinking about the catalytic converters. People used to steal them because they're platinum inside of them. They were so expensive. And then they would take there was something I watched recently where they went through and like, I think it was like the mafia. They went through and stole like all the catalytic converters off of cars and like a lot. I think it was Tulsa King with Sylvester Stallone. They stole all the catalytic converters and sold them. And it was funny, like a funny story about how they were using the recycling kind of for a nefarious purpose, but it works. I mean, it's truly platinum is expensive.
You know? I guess not the behavior we're all looking for in manufacturing.
No. It was kind of funny.
Cindy, you touched a little bit about like Scott mentioned it too, a little bit, we both did, about the technology and how technology kind of enables sustainable manufacturing and sustainability. Can you talk a little bit about that, especially, I guess, specifically how maybe IFS enables that and creates those closed loop systems, right, where you can both manufacture but also reuse and recycle? How does that work?
Yeah. So I think, you know, where we have found, you know, the sustainability opportunities with IFS has been pretty interesting. So, you know, a number of things that they've kind of put into the application, right? They've got a sustainability management module that IFS has now introduced to the market. And really the focus of that is really simplifying reporting and management of your sustainability data. So kind of one central location to put your data, a catalog of KPIs, you know, that you can use and help yourselves kind of set long-term organizational goals and so forth around that. They also have an emissions tracker that they've built in. So kind of enabling the organization to mitigate their own environmental impacts. How do you track and understand the emissions you're putting out? You know, that's becoming more and more of a requirement of companies. You know, we talked very early on in the conversation here about, you know, rules and regulations internationally. That's also what's driving it back to us here in North America. You know, if you're going to do business internationally and globally, those reporting metrics are going to be really important for you as you kind of sell or deliver to other countries. And then they have a number of cloud ESG lobbies. So in the IFS cloud world, lobby is like a dashboard, which is probably a more common name for it than lobby, but just the ability to have kind of built-in metrics right on your dashboard, on your lobby, that you can understand for those people that are really kind of in that, you know, occupational health and safety, or they need it for training or employee management, those types of things. So really important there. And then the last one is really like support of circular manufacturing. So being able to do the remanufacturing capability in cloud. IFS introduced this a number of years ago. I can remember one of the IFS customer events where they had set up a whole, you know, sort of circular manufacturing playground inside the event itself, where you could actually see how this would work and work through it. So when you think about circular manufacturing, you know, how do you really enable high usage, control of reused components? You know, it does take a whole shift in mindset. It starts with that R&D and the engineers in an organization, a group of people you guys work with very well in CAD Talk, right? But that's where it starts, is the mindset and the thinking about how do I build products that and use raw materials that can be reused in the next manufacturing cycle and so forth, ultimately reducing waste, ultimately reducing how much energy you're consuming, and, you know, really operating production in a much more efficient way. So those are a few things that IFS has now built into their cloud application. We found it to be sort of a marriage made in heaven from a Baker Tilly perspective, not just a digital perspective. And so as you can imagine, as a professional services firm that, you know, is, you know, multi-billion dollars and serving a very broad client base, you know, one of the things that we have brought to the market is, you know, just ESG initiatives and services. And so we offer the market those things and where you would start. And one of the first things we do is just help clients really just sit down and understand, how do you even start collecting data and information to even understand where you're at from an ESG perspective? You can't have a plan and grow if you don't even know where you're starting from. And so one of the most fundamental things that IFS has put into the application is the ability to collect the data.
Yeah, you have to benchmark before you can change, right? I mean, you have to even know where you are. You know, it's like getting on the scale in the morning. You can't lose weight without getting on the scale. Yeah. Well, you can, but you won't know it.
So, Cindy, do you find that companies come to you to? But I imagine if I'm a manufacturing company and I feel like, okay, I know I should do something with sustainability, or I have opportunities in my industry, at my manufacturing industry, to leverage the circular manufacturing and sustainability, but I don't, you know, like, I don't know how to get there. Like, what is let's say I'm not using IFS today. Like, what's that journey look like? What does that journey look like from, okay, I've been a manufacturing company for 50 years, 100 years, 75 years, whatever that is. And then I know I can have all kinds of opportunity to leverage that sort of circular manufacturing. But how do I enter sustainability? How do I get there from here, right? Like you said, because now my current system, it's too hard to track. It's all manual. There's no way to do it. Maybe a number of other issues. So what does that look like if you're a how would you consult with a manufacturing company to get to that, you know, place they would want to be?
Yeah. Really, it starts with reporting or awareness and education, you know, and that's some of the services that Baker Tilly as a firm offers to clients out in the space, right? As people are kind of entering this ESG market and what do we have to do? Because maybe we want to enter an international market and we have to be able to prove some of this stuff out, right? And whether we are there today, understand the pressures internationally are going to come to the US. And it, while it's not a requirement to do business today, it is in some subsectors, I would say, and it is with many customers out there, but it is a requirement in the international space. And there are, you know, laws and regulations around what you have to do. So for us, you know, when we're starting with a client where they don't even know where to start, it really starts with awareness and education. So really kind of how do we help them understand what it is? Start by putting a program together for them, you know, more sophistication and more clients that have a sophisticated strategy. It's more, how do we develop and refine that further? And just reporting preparation, because what it really means is you have to report to your customers and in some cases, the government of the country that you're working in. And so you have to have that information. Like you said, Jeff, like most companies don't. Many of them are on old ERP systems. They're on best of breed platforms. They're not all on IFS Cloud, even though we'd love everybody to move to IFS Cloud. But if you're not there yet, you got to start collecting. It doesn't matter whether you have the system or not. If you don't have any information, you can report manually. And then hopefully we get you there, you know, through automation and other things as you continue to grow in the space of ESG. You know, we do assurance readiness. So how do you even get ready to do this? Identifying and implementing processes that actually control sustainability reporting, because it's not a one and done. Yeah, you start someplace, but you have to have those processes laid out in your business. And so we help clients think about how do you put that process together and how do you sustain that process? And then, you know, just again, the strategy, what are your targets and goals? You know, what's a decarbonization strategy? What about technology implementation? And that's sort of that other piece there. And so one of the things that, you know, we do is we have a monthly meeting with all of our IFS Solutions team members. And, you know, in the last year, we've brought our ESG team into that monthly meeting to teach about the Baker Tilly services and how we can collaborate together around what we're doing technology-wise and what they're doing in the market to help clients actually build a plan and report on their sustainability and ESG initiatives. So a lot of cross-collaboration and cross-opportunity here because we're all talking the same thing, just from a different angle and from a different perspective.
Do you see most of the kind of initiatives for this being driven from like, usually what's like you mentioned earlier, like they may not have to do it today because they're selling domestically, they're selling in the United States, but then they try to go to another country that has stricter, you know, rules around like, if you want to do business here, your carbon footprint needs to be X. And then that's driving that demand to do that. I think of similar examples of that. Like when we started hiring internationally, we needed to understand what labor laws were. That was one of the reasons we had to get more sophisticated with our human resources software and things like that. Another one example of this I can think of is like, I was thinking about like Avalara and tax software when the legislation changed and there was a lot more, I think there was like a lawsuit or something happened, if I remember correctly, that drove the sales tax problem. And then they earned time for that solution because everybody needed that solution. So they were in a great place. They kind of rode that wave of that legislation coming through. So it seems like this could be the same type of thing. If you have a solution for this type of, when that world is going in this direction, the wave is happening, that's asking for more and more of this, that you're going to be in a great sweet spot when that comes around. Is that kind of what the drive you're seeing is like more of like policy from countries and things, or people trying to go international and the laws are a little bit different and they're trying to drive towards that in order to get more markets, basically to grow?
No, great question, Scott. And I would say, yes, it's one of the factors that we're seeing. You know, again, as the smallest US-based company could be doing business internationally, right? It seems like, you know, as time has marched on and the three of us have certainly lived through watching things happen across the globe and how the international marketplace has changed over time. I would say, yes, there are pressures coming from the European markets that have laws and requirements around this. But one of the things that I started to notice, the Gen Z group too. Yeah, very interested in sustainability and giving back and, not consuming our precious resources. And so you kind of have two different factors in my mind coming at you. You've got the business side of this and you've got the people side of this all converging into like the same pressure at the end of the day. I can go back maybe 5 years ago and, you know, interviewing individuals coming out of college and campuses. And, you know, questions have changed in terms of what they want to know about. They want to know about your sustainability commitments. What does that look like? And I think that there is pressure, not only from a professional services firm like Baker Tilly, who's out in the world consulting, but everybody, you know, you see that shift in the next generation and what their beliefs are and what their values are. And they are actually putting pressure as well on companies to be thinking about that. They want to go to work for a company that cares about what they're giving back and what they're doing. That is important, you know, to some portion of our population. And so I think it's that. And then, you know, I do think the world kind of turned, well, we know the world turned upside down with the pandemic. It changed people's thinking in so, so many ways. And I have to believe that the pandemic had an impact as well. And just in terms of how we all came together as a global community and thinking about what does that do to us as a society, as a generation of people, and what do we need to think about? And then you just fundamentally, you have aging machinery and infrastructure, and now you have to go buy new. And I would think people are, you know, that are selling are asking the questions, what's important to you, right? So that forces a manufacturer to get smarter about what are my options out there, right? What do I have to do? So I think there's a lot of factors. Certainly the regulations around the globe are the starting point, but I would say number two is that Gen Z group that's really pushing from a people perspective.
Well, I think even the regulations are even probably being driven from the Gen Z thing too, because people vote the leaders in who make the policies. So it's like, it's all driven from that sentiment, which is, and it's a great point about COVID and the pandemic. It's like, it kind of gave us a view of the world that we didn't see for years, because it's like generations went with the way things were. And then when you shut everything down and you could see what we were doing, it exposed it. It showed everything, like, wow, there's actually mountains in California. Didn't know that, you know, because I can't see them half the time, you know, and things like that. You just couldn't see, you know, it just kind of uncovered that, like, oh, wow, we are doing something. There actually is a material effect to this choice that we made in the past. It hasn't always been this way. So
that was one of the most powerful things for me, is that satellite view of California.
That's all that satellite view? Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
One of the things I was thinking about, and the pandemic was very insightful, is that in addition to everything shutting down and the seeing it, I think how small the world got for people. And what I mean by that is, you know, something that started, at least from our perspective in America, so far away, could affect us thousands and thousands of miles away, has the same effect, I think, environmentally, right? So if you're producing pollution somewhere else, or you're not responsible or sustainable, then that's going to affect everybody. I think maybe that's a part of it too, right? Just the realization that the world's a lot smaller than we think.
And then we all kind of are living the same lives, right? I mean, at the end of the day, that's the thing, is like you come together within a country or within a city over some political things. But this was not. This was everybody coming together across the world.
Oh, yeah. That was a great one. Yeah. You see definitely that shift in the thinking, and then it got accelerated by these kind of world events that the pandemic definitely, I see that now. It makes a lot of sense now. Very cool. Yeah.
Anything else we're about 30, 40 minutes into this. Anything else that you'd like to share about Baker Tilly or about, you know, sustainability in your article, or anything we didn't touch upon that might be of interest to folks listening?
Maybe just a little bit deeper on data and how critical data management really is. I think, you know, it kind of wraps around a number of things that we've been talking about from a Baker Tilly perspective, both as a part of our IFS solutions practice, as a part of our digital practices. You know, let's face it, data is king these days. And so I think, you know, collecting data, and especially around ESG reporting and what you need, you know, where are you spending your capital on sustainable initiatives? Companies that you do business with want to know that. And so, you know, if you're in that, you've got to be able to collect that. You know, green gas emissions, collecting KPIs around that, energy consumption. I think I mentioned that earlier in the podcast. You know, those are really quantitative. You know, you can get your arms around those things, but there's also qualitative data measures, you know, whether that's doing surveys with your employees on working conditions. The customer satisfaction becomes, you know, a really important element of this as well. So, you know, when you think about technology and IFS and the capabilities there, you know, their intersection with Microsoft Power BI and being able to really capture data and then use that data in some ways just to me, just another benefit of IFS Cloud and what it's bringing to the marketplace, because data is king. Data is key and it's fundamental, and you can't do your reporting. And you, again, you don't know where you need to improve. How do you need to refine your strategy? What do you need to do better if you aren't even measuring it? So I think, you know, just fundamentally, data is just a very, very important baseline element to anything that you're doing around ESG that we've talked about kind of and threaded through here.
That's a really good point, because we had a similar conversation with several other ERP and folks. And this conversation is the same, especially around AI and the importance of that data. Because if you don't have the amount of that data and the data quality, right, you can't really change the AI is built on data, right? That's why they build the data centers to create the AI. I was listening to a podcast this morning about the AI, like different areas of AI where you can invest, right? So there's like the chip level, and then there's the data center level. And I think about the data centers. That's why do they, it's the data, right? That's what the AI uses, the data. So if you're not collecting that data and you don't, and it's not quality, what you're only going to get, you can't even leverage the AI in the way that you want. So to your point, making it easier to collect that data, have a place for that, and having better processes and data collection, data process and easier ways to collect it to make it more consistent, that's how you're going to leverage all of that information, right? To make those better decisions.
Yeah, definitely. No, agreed. It's part of why, you know, we've seen some of our digital services really shift and change and grow over the years. We're finding more and more clients coming and asking for help on data governance to keep that data clean, manageable, because you aren't, as a manufacturer or any other business, going to get to take on the technology of AI without that clarity. And, you know, as you think about everything that's happened over the last decade, you know, we haven't talked about the people side of this either, and what's, you know, potentially driving some of all of this is just the lack of capable resources that are in the workforce, right? I mean, you think about, you know, I think about a decade ago and talking about what was coming with baby boomers all retiring and that large generation of people that were going to exit the workforce, right? And we have to think about automation and sustainability and what are we going to do? And then the pandemic comes along and it accelerates that even more. You know, even when you had some hanging on and still in the workforce, so many opted to step out of it. And so I think, you know, that's really interesting to me in terms of where what we thought was going to happen and why, and how different that is today because of just world events and things that have just occurred over time. And it kind of brings us to where we are today in North America with all going on with the tariff conversation and how that's intended to drive an increase in manufacturing back into the US. And so as I think about that and think about, you know, how do you kind of wrap up this from my vantage point, this podcast, in terms of that, no matter what we think about there, sustainability and the change in what we are doing in manufacturing is going to be driven by some of these changes in manufacturing in the US. The reality is you are not going to reopen steel factories that were built decades and decades ago. There is no technology, and you aren't going to find the people that want to come back into those environments at the pace and scale that is needed. So automation and remanufacturing concepts and how do we make this more circular and a sustainable process is going to get pushed even harder and harder in the future years.
That's a great point, Cindy. It's like, it's not going to be, the manufacturing won't come back the way it was. It's not the way it'll look different. It'll look completely different, but it will come back because it will be, you know, but it's whether or not it's how it's going to look. It's going to be, I think nobody really, we can make predictions, but we don't really know. But those things will become important because, like you said, that people don't want to be in those environments that are causing those types of issues. I mean, it's just all, you know, and there's going to be a lot of creativity kind of comes out of this problem, which I always think is like, there's an opportunity in every kind of catastrophe, right? It's like, and it never was, never let a catastrophe go to waste. You know, you always can find some really creative solutions out of that and some change. But yeah, it's a great point. I mean, it's going to look completely different.
Yeah, definitely.
As we wrap up, you know, I think, you know, what I maybe share from each of us, you know, one thing that was new for you, I guess I'll start. For me, I thought that what you said, Cindy, about was really insightful about the pandemic and how that, like, which influenced the Generation Z. And like, I didn't think about it as much, but I think you're right that the very eye-opening and really pushes out the market pushes us to do these things. And Gen Z is a big part of that market.
Yeah, I have to say it's similar type of insight that you brought up, like the idea that like we kind of attribute things to like, you know, the government or the politics or the, you know, this region or something, but it's actually just people and the opinions and the feelings of the people drive all of that through. It's like, it's actually, you know, we are the enemy that we're describing, right? You know, we are the thing that we're describing, you know, so it's like, so the way that we, what we believe and what we, you know, what we communicate and kind of market to each other is what drives all the things that happen. So that's a very, very similar type of thing. It's just kind of a reminder of that. That's still how the world works. Even in this AI world, everything's being driven, still driven by the people.
Yeah. And for me, it's just the reflection on events or changes in our economy or in our, you know, workforce or whatever all those things are. You cannot see what's going to happen in the moment, but it's, you know, it's a lot easier to look back in the rearview mirror and see. And so I think the lesson there is, you sort of have to embrace what's happening to some extent, right? I mean, I think you have to embrace AI, you have to embrace ESG technology and ESG initiatives. You don't know where it's going to take us. We can't see, we don't have, none of us have a crystal ball to see where it is, but the reflection is certainly there on how those things actually shape our future and what changes. And, you know, I've been in manufacturing and in technology for more than 30 years and, you know, never would have imagined to see all the things that I've seen across those 30 years and how life has changed and how businesses have changed over those years. And I'm excited to see what's going to come and what the evolution will be with all the new technology that IFS Cloud is bringing to the table and, you know, how Baker Tilly can help clients really kind of embrace that future, because it's a scary world for many companies and especially manufacturers that are not fast adopters of technology.
Oh yeah.
So Cindy, before we end the podcast, where can folks find, you know, find you and Baker Tilly and the Baker Tilly practice? Because Baker Tilly is an enormous organization. So where can they find you in the IFS practice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you or to read what you produce?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So first of all, you know, a lot of information on our IFS solutions practice, as well as our ESG initiatives and other services we provide to the market, BakerTilly.com. Pretty easy website. Baker Tilly is spelled BakerTilly.com. And so lots of insightful information out there. Sign yourself up. We do a lot of webinars and all kinds of information sharing, and that's free to the public. And we're always happy to have you join us for any of those. And then for me, easy to get a hold of me, cindy.bertel@bakertilly.com. I'm also on LinkedIn and you can find me there. So happy to communicate and connect with anybody in that realm. And really always excited to meet new people and connect and share ideas with people.
Yeah, I guess we had that IFS Connect event coming up in June, I think, in Nashville. So that'd be a good opportunity for folks who listen to this podcast to come by the IFS Connect event and stop by the Baker Tilly booth or the CAD Talk booth or to just, you know, have a conversation. It's a great opportunity. Looking forward to that. I think it's put the dates in the show notes here, but I'm pretty sure it's in early June.
It's the first week of June. It's June 2nd, 3rd, and 4th in Nashville. Actually, event starts on the 3rd, which is a Tuesday. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Cindy, for joining. This was a great conversation. So thanks everybody else for listening. You can find Cindy and Baker Tilly at bakertilly.com. And then, of course, you can subscribe to the CAD Talk podcast wherever you get podcasts sold, the Integrate Intelligently podcast. Thanks for listening. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CAD Talk Software. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss future episodes. Video versions of the podcast will be available on CAD Talk's YouTube page, linked in the show notes. The Integrate Intelligently podcast is hosted by CAD Talk CEO Scott Brickler and CRO Jeff Brickler. Our producer is myself, marketing manager John Thomas. If you have a story you want to share on the podcast or you want to partner with us, let us know. Email marketing@cadtalk.com and be sure to mention podcast in the subject line.